have a report from WBZ newsman Bob Lape on the Attorney General Edward Brooke, who's actually acting governor today, on plans for closing the schools and business. Now to WBZ newsman Bob Lape.
Acting Governor Edward W. Brooke, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth, has laid clear the state's position concerning this coming Monday. Governor Endicott Peabody, he said, speaking from Washington, where he had gone to pay the respects of the people of Massachusetts to our beloved late President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and to offer to the Kennedy family the sympathy of the citizens of the late President's native state to his family, has asked me to request the people of the Commonwealth to join in the National Day of Mourning proclaimed by President Lyndon B. Johnson. To this end, said Brooke, the governor urges business and industry to close on Monday to the extent possible, consistent with the public welfare and safety, so that our citizens may be given an opportunity to join with the nation in final tribute to our first citizen. Governor Peabody has asked me, he said, to order all state offices to remain closed Monday and to express his desire that county, city, and town offices throughout the Commonwealth do the same. The Attorney General said he has talked with banking industry executives. They hope to operate, he said, with skeleton crews. There is no legal holiday, Brooke stated, that can be declared by the governor, and it is essential that banks be open to process checks and notes. Brooke said he has spoken with officials of the Associated Industries of Massachusetts, the Chambers of Commerce, Retail Trade Board, and all have assured cooperation. As far as Superior Court is concerned, only one facet of it will remain open in any way, that the equity session open for emergency business should it arise. The Attorney General said it is his understanding that all schools in the Commonwealth will be closed, and both locally and statewide, all package stores have been asked to remain closed all day. The Massachusetts State House puts a somber face forward into the drizzle-dulled night, floodlights illuminating the black bunting of morning on its front. The gay Christmas decorations on the Capitol are dark, as are the 30,000 bulbs and the festive displays on the Common below. When the president's hometown, crushed by his loss, will welcome the Christmas season, remains in doubt. From the State House, Bob Lape, WBZ News.
Bob Lape reporting on the Attorney General Edward Brooke's plans for closing schools and businesses. One other point that Bob made, we will reiterate, from the Boston Licensing Board Chairman John Callahan. The Boston Licensing Board, at the request of Governor Peabody and Mayor Collins, is asking all liquor dealers to refrain from selling any liquor Monday, November 25th, in honor of the memory of the late President John F. Kennedy. The President of the Associated Industries of Massachusetts today expressed grief and shock at the untimely death of President Kennedy yesterday. C. Robert Yeager, who also serves as president of the L.G. Balfour Company, Attleboro, said in accordance with a request of President Johnson, he'd ordered both his Attleboro and North Attleboro plants to remain closed on Monday. He urged that manufacturing employers of the state take appropriate steps to allow employees to attend religious services Monday, honoring President Kennedy's memory. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, mourned by high and low alike, will be given a hero's burial Monday in the Arlington National Cemetery, followed by a pontifical requiem mass at noon. It was supposed for a time that the former president would be laid to rest here at Holy Hood Cemetery in Brookline, next to his infant son, John Bouvier. But apparently, or Patrick Bouvier, rather, apparently this is not true, that he will be buried in Arlington National Cemetery. In an official proclamation, one of his first acts as president, Lyndon B. Johnson declared Monday a day of national mourning for his predecessor, held by a sniper's bullets in an act that outrages decent men. The new president also appealed to the American people to assemble in their churches Monday for prayer and invited all people anywhere who share this nation's grief to join in the day of mourning. A little later, the White House announced that the family of the slain president had decided on interment in the military cemetery in Virginia, just across the Potomac River from the nation's capital. Only one other president, William Howard Taft, is buried in Arlington Shrine of the nation's heroes. Holiday shopping in downtown Boston had none of its usual Saturday afternoon pre-Thanksgiving spirit. As you walked through the stores, you were reminded again and again of the sad events of the times by loudspeakers announcing that Monday the stores will be closed out of respect to our late president. Walking down Washington Street, pictures of the president were beginning to appear. One store has pulled a drape in front of its Christmas window display. The pictures were a study of the man, John Kennedy. Some were recent, others of the younger Kennedy, when as a representative and then senator, young John Kennedy campaigned through his hometown of Boston, winning votes and friends. You drive past a frame house on Beale Street, the birthplace of our president, and people stand in front of a commemorative plaque that has hardly settled into its place. Shortly after John Kennedy became the 35th President of the United States, the citizens of Brookline erected this plaque in his honor. Now a flag flies at half-mast from the Kennedy Forge. Its most famous inhabitant is now dead, a man described by his cardinal as a martyr in the true sense. In a speech he never delivered, President Kennedy called on Americans to stand together with renewed confidence in our cause, united in our heritage of the past and our hopes for the future. Kennedy was to have delivered his address in Austin, Texas, Friday night. He died in Dallas, slain by an assassin's bullet 5 hours before it was to have been delivered. The White House released today the text that President Kennedy had prepared for a fundraising dinner of the Texas Democratic State Committee. In it, the president said he has made good the pledges of his 1960 campaign, and we have America moving again. Almost everywhere we look, the story is the same. The president's text said, in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia, in the Council of the World, and in the jungles of the far-off nations, there is now renewed confidence in our country and our convictions. The address said it continued. For this country is moving, and it must not stop. It cannot stop. For this is a time for courage and a time of challenge. Neither conformity nor complacency will do. Neither the fanatics nor the faint-hearted are needed. And our duty as a party is not to our party alone, but to the nation, and indeed, to all mankind. Our duty is not merely the preservation of political power, but the preservation of peace and freedom. So let us not be petty when our cause is so great. Let us not quarrel amongst ourselves when our nation's future is at stake. I gather that's kind of prophetic. In much of his speech, the president talked of the campaign promises he'd made in Texas City during the 1960 presidential race. The historic bonds which link Texas and the Democratic Party are no temporary union of convenience, the address said. They are deeply embedded in the history and purpose of this state and party. For the Democratic Party is not a collection of diverse interests brought together only to win elections. We are united instead by a common history and heritage, by a respect for the deeds of the past and a recognition of the needs of the future. In the last prepared address, Kennedy spoke often of his vice president, Texan Lyndon B. Johnson, who now has succeeded him in the White House. The president said he promised in every speech as a candidate that if Lyndon Johnson and I were elected, we would get this country moving again. That pledge has been fulfilled, the speech said.
In Dallas, police said flatly today that Lee Harvey Oswald, a pro-Castro Marxist and one-time defector to Russia, assassinated President Kennedy. And they have the evidence to prove it, including a new development. They said he had no accomplices, though they continued to question several men, apparently in connection with the 24-year-old ex-Marine's movements before and after a sniper fired 2 bullets into President Kennedy from ambush in downtown Dallas. The case is cinched, said the homicide chief Captain Will Fritz, one of the most respected police officers in Texas. It was a new development of the case since this morning, he said, but I am not in a position to reveal it. However, we are sure of our case. The district attorney cautiously agreed. There was no question but that they would seek the death penalty for Oswald, but maintained his innocence since his arrest less than 2 hours after the assassination. Oswald stuck to his story that he left work early in the building from which the shots were fired because he thought it would close in honor of the president. He said he rode a bus halfway to a room he rented under a fictitious name, took a cab home, changed clothes, and went to a movie. He was subdued in a fight with police at the theater. His boss said he saw Oswald in the building right after the assassination. President Johnson got a report from FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover today on progress of the investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy. Pierre Salinger, White House press secretary, said the new chief executive telephoned Hoover to get the latest report on the situation in Dallas. He said he did not know what Hoover told Johnson, but added that the president would talk with Hoover again later in the day. In his mother's eyes, Lee Harvey Oswald is the beloved youngest son who always brought home what he earned and never spent it on himself. But to Dallas policemen, the son, 24-year-old turncoat, is the assassin of President Kennedy and a murderer of a patrolman who tried to arrest Oswald yesterday. Acquaintances apparently cannot agree on their assessments of the accused man, and his personality emerged from their views like a puzzle with pieces missing. He was always having beefs with the guys in the barracks, said ex-Marine Sergeant Donald Goodwin of Los Angeles, Oswald's section chief during his 1956 to 59 stint in the Corps. We weren't exactly close acquaintances, but I did know about his temper and the habit he had of ripping off at the wrong time. I was glad to see him go. Certain facts about Oswald's life appear incontrovertible. He was born in New Orleans on July 19, 1939, after the death of his father. He was reared by his mother at Fort Worth, Texas. He had to work as a child. He always brought the money home, his mother said. He was a loner. sought escape in books, but did poorly in school. He dropped out of school, out of high school, after 1 year. He was 17. Lee Harvey Oswald.